This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. La Crosse's beer-making history stretches back to 1854, when Nicolai Brewery and the John Gund Brewing Company first opened shop. Since then, there have been more than 15 breweries established in the city, some more long-lasting and culturally significant than others. On today's show, we're talking about the impact of breweries on the region. My guests today are Randy Hughes. He's the brewmaster at City Brewery. Also, Joe Kachiever. He's the brewmaster at Pearl Street Brewery. Why is it that beer has played such an important role in La Crosse? Randy?
La Crosse was incorporated in 1848, I believe. So, and you mentioned 1854 is the first established brewery. That was the same time frame. And the immigrants came here from, of course, Europe and other areas, and probably never going to see their family, friends again. And they needed something when they came to this wild area to remind them of home. So one of the first things they did was they built breweries. So they had a little taste of home right here in the United States. And the reason La Crosse really was so popular was because of the Mississippi River and the river traffic. This was a rowdy town. This was a river town, a lot of lumber mills, lumber barons, sawmills, and lots of boat traffic, and a lot of thirsty lumbermen. And so there were a lot of breweries, bars, and bordellos in La Crosse in the mid to late 1800s.
And was most of the beer that was brewed, at least in the 1800s, maybe even early 1900s, did that stay within the region, or was that shipped off to maybe Minneapolis or Milwaukee, Chicago?
Brewing in the 1800s was much more of a localized thing. That's why La Crosse, for example, could support multiple breweries being entered at once, because they were often smaller, quite a bit smaller, and geographically their reach wasn't that far. Refrigeration was in its infancy at the late 1800s. Microbiology was still considered a myth by some scientists in the late 1800s. So people drank fresh beer, or they drank old stale beer, but it didn't last long because they made it in smaller batches usually.
Randy, can you talk about how you first got involved in brewing? Because I understand you've been in the industry for quite a while.
I've been at the brewery since 1978. And, of course, back then it was the G. Heilman Brewing Company, one of the largest brewers in the United States. And it was a completely different scenario out there at that time than it is today. The number of brewers in the United States was down to just a handful, all more or less making kind of the same kind of beer. American lager beers, light beers had just barely started, but hadn't had much of an impact at that time. It was really kind of boring out there. Then we had a big shakeout in the industry in the 1980s. The big guys got bigger. The middle tier, G. Heilman Brewing Company, Stroh, Pabst, kind of fell off. But the best and most interesting part of the 80s was the rise of the craft brewers, and it really has brought it back to pre-Prohibition days when you had small local breweries everywhere, and it's fun again.
So when you started working at the brewery, what job did you have, and how did you work your way up to becoming the brewmaster?
Actually, I was graduating from University of Wisconsin La Crosse in 1978. I had a degree in biology with a chem minor. Didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I had a friend who worked at the brewery at the time, and she let me know about a quality assurance position, a lab position, that was opening up on nights, third shift. And I thought, well, I'd done a lot of undergrad work down on 3rd Street over the years, and I thought, well, the brewery wouldn't be too bad a place to work while I figured out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And obviously, I haven't figured that out because I'm still there. So from there, I just kind of worked my way up the ranks and took brewing-specific courses and programs through the years, left the lab, got into brewing supervision, worked my way up through the G. Heilman Brewing Company organization, and in 1995, was promoted to brewmaster, and I've been there ever since. So it's kind of old school method, work your way up from the bottom.
And Joe, can you talk about your history with Pearl Street Brewery?
I also grew up in Wisconsin. I went to UW-Milwaukee and kicked around Milwaukee forever and finally headed west to go to Colorado. I had some family out there and just to kind of snowboard and hang out for a while when I was done going to college. Still didn't really have any direction. Got a job at a brewery out there and was completely immersed in the craft beer world, which didn't exist too much in La Crosse or in Wisconsin in general at the time. It was just kind of an infancy in the Midwest, although West Coast and Colorado is kind of a hotbed for craft beers back in the as early as the 80s. You know, all of a sudden I found something that I was actually interested in and actually wanted to finish a book about, as opposed to a lot of things I took in college. But, you know, just started working at a brewery and kegging beer, bottling beer. I wanted to learn everything. At that point, I thought there was just no turning back. I never thought it was going to be a temporary job once I worked in it for a while and not afraid of hard work. And there's plenty of that to do in the brewing industry. And I was willing to work just a little bit harder than everyone else. And I was promoted a couple times. I started taking classes and courses in beer. I went to school briefly in Denver for beer studies. I think just time and on-the-job work and constant interest really kept propelling me towards, you know, what I would call a career now.
So what made you finally decide that you wanted to establish a brewery in La Crosse?
I don't know that I was ready to do that, but an opportunity presented itself, and I kind of looked at it as a one-time shot. I was working. I had worked at a couple of breweries, and there was this one that I had done an internship for about 10 months, maybe a year before that. And I heard through the grapevine that they were going bankrupt. They were going out of business. So I called my previous boss or, you know, that I had done the internship with. And I said, is it true? What's going on? And he said, sure enough, it was a bad situation. You know, they were going bankrupt. The bank was going to come in and reclaim their all their equipment and take possession of their building and everything. So I asked them if I could make them an offer on their equipment, and I did. And they reluctantly accepted it because it was a very low-ball offer. In fact, I didn't have any money at all at the time. But when they accepted it, I got a hold of my dad in Milwaukee and said, hey, Dad, can I borrow some money? It was ended up being about $12,000, and I bought the brunt of their major brewing equipment, not every hose and every clamp, but you know, a lot of their tanks and equipment that they still had ownership of, that they actually had the legal right to sell if they wanted to, loaded it on a trailer, drove it to La Crosse, and just kind of planted roots here in La Crosse.
Randy, you come from a long line of brewmasters. I'm wondering if you can just kind of remind some people just sort of the history and that evolution from Heilemann becoming City Brewery.
Started in the 80s when the beer industry kind of flattened out, and for brewers to grow their volume, they had to take it from somebody else. The big three ended up to be the biggest winners, the big three being Anheuser-Busch, Miller, and Coors at the time. And the middle tier was G. Heilemann Brewing Company, Stroh Brewery, and Pabst Breweries. And that's where the volume to grow the big three came from. Most of the volume from that middle tier, which accounted for probably 50 to 60 million barrels of beer a year between the three breweries, shifted almost 100% over to the top three. So the middle three struggled. We went through a series of buyouts, bankruptcies. We ended up in the hands of bankers and various other financial groups who didn't know anything about beer or selling beer or making beer. And by the mid-90s, after struggling, closing plants, we were purchased by Stroh Breweries. So it was good to be back in at least a brewing family again. But it was still very tough. It was the merger, you know, kind of the merger of two struggling middle-tier brewers. And while it was better, after 3 or 4 years, the Stroh family decided they had had enough and were going to get out of the brewing industry. They sold all of the brands, which were all of the G. Heilemann brewery brands plus the Stroh brands. You're literally talking dozens of brands. Most of them were sold to the Pabst Brewing Company, with a handful going to Miller Brewing Company. So here it was, 1999. We were had been the flagship brewery of the G. Heilemann Brewing Company, 5-million-barrel brewery, and had kind of risen to the top of the Stroh brewery hierarchy, and were slated to do 4 million barrels in 1999 until they sold all the volume. So here we sat with a very nice, modern 5-million-barrel brewery and absolutely nothing to make. So the brewery closed down in July of 99. You just don't restart 5-million-barrel breweries. And most people started to go back to school or move on to other careers, maybe even other breweries. But there was a core of us at the brewery here who got together and decided that, you know, if there was any chance of keeping this going, we needed to stick together, because the only way it was going to happen is if you had key individuals in every area just kind of hang together. So we stuck together, found some investors with the help of the City of La Crosse and the County of La Crosse, found some investors to restart the brewery. We started up with our own brands because we didn't have any. We couldn't call it the Heilemann Brewery. That name had been sold. We couldn't call it the Old Style Brewery, anything like that. So we went back to the original name of the brewery, which is still on the facade out on 3rd Street, the City Brewery of La Crosse. Launched our City Lager and Light, followed right behind by La Crosse Lager and Light. And they were very well received by the public and won some awards. Our investors kind of ran out of money by early 2000, but we'd made just enough of a spark, enough of a flare there to catch the attention of local investors by that time, who said, maybe these guys really can do it. By the end of 2000, or late 2000, we were going again under local ownership and starting to grow. So we started from that initial 20 to 30 people to today, probably back up to about 500 employees, plus or minus 50 for seasonality, which is, for La Crosse, is a good number, especially considering the reductions in manufacturing jobs in the area over that same time period. To be able to have 500 decent-paying jobs for people and their families in this area is quite an accomplishment. So we've made it work. It doesn't happen very often.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about brewing in the La Crosse area. My guests are Randy Hughes, he's the brewmaster at City Brewery, and Joe Kachiever, he's the brewmaster at Pearl Street Brewery. Randy, you talked about how Heilemann's had to sell off its brand names and whatnot, and I understand that City Brewery, is it a contract brewery? Is that the correct terminology for it? And so if people see the products in the store, what exactly is it that you all are making so people can know, oh, this was actually brewed in La Crosse?
As I said, we started with our own products, but obviously we couldn't grow them fast enough to really make too much of an impact or even keep the lights on. It was through contract production that we've really been able to shine. Ironically, that came from that middle tier of brewers collapsing, and that opened up a niche for a fairly large brewer out there with capacity to produce for other products, including things that aren't beer, for basically all over the world. So today we're about 99% contract production. We'll probably produce just over 2 million barrels of beer in La Crosse. We're back to a corporation that includes two other breweries, one in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, the old Rolling Rock Brewery, and one in Memphis, Tennessee, that was an old, well, most recently a Coors plant. We've not only kind of retained the brewery in La Crosse, we've retained breweries in other parts of the country too, as well as their workers. Now we make everything from Mike's Hard Lemonade and all their different flavors, Smirnoff Ice, Arizona Iced Tea. We're doing work for Boston Beer Company. We're making Sapporo, the number one Japanese beer for North America, and doing a lot of other smaller, much smaller contracts, too. It's crazy. We're doing everything from high-powered malt liquors and American lagers and lights to ales and porters and wheat beers and flavored malt beverages and just about everything you can name. We probably have 150 different products that we produce now.
Wow. So is beer still the number one product being made at the City Brewery? Or?
That's a good question. It's probably not. Well, as a category, no. It's probably about 25-30% of what we do collectively. The rest of it is flavored products of various sorts.
And Joe, at Pearl Street Brewery, the focus is more on craft beer. Can you sort of talk about the different products being made and the evolution of the different kind of beers that you've made over time?
You know, I was really into craft beers back when I was in my mid-20s and out in Colorado again. And so we started this brewery up, and La Crosse had kind of its toe in the water as far as people's palates and craft beer. Mainly, they didn't know what it was. There was, of course, a small percentage of people that did. They loved it. They wanted more of it. They were super excited that we were opening this little brewery in downtown La Crosse and that we would be producing craft beers. We started out in December of 1999, actually right around the time when City Brewery was getting up and running. In the last 150 years, there was this brief glimpse of time where there wasn't any brewery brewing beer in La Crosse, but it was for less than a year, you know. And coming to La Crosse was a no-brainer. Great water supply here in La Crosse, and you'll find that where old historical breweries have been built throughout the country, there's always a great water source. That was a big deciding factor in getting in there. La Crosse had a solid amount of people that were interested in craft beer, and it was a great place for us to get started. And it's a beer town. It has been since before our grandparents were born, and keeping that tradition alive is huge, and I feel really proud to be in La Crosse. Getting back to the beer, we started out with our pale ale, which we still brew, and our DTB brown ale, which we also still brew, and a couple other brands, and just had a big party and opened up the doors, and we were down on 4th and Pearl, and basically produced beer for the bodega for the first several months to a year, and then started selling beer at other local places. Fazy's was one of our first customers, The Helm, Yesterday's Bar, just, you know, bars that were within the neighborhood, and from there, it just kind of it just continued rotating an endless array of beers that I was able to brew out of the basement down there at the old brewery. It was a lot of fun, but after 5 years or 6 years of that, it was time to move on or do something else. And of course, there's not for me and with my tiny little brewery and brewing operation, there wasn't a lot of money in it. I didn't make any money to. Other than kind of go day to day. So there I was again with no money trying to figure out what to do 5 more years later. And then along came this cool old building that had been vacated from the former La Crosse Footwear building, which is where we moved in. So we found that building, and that was really the spark that got things going again. We ended up with some brewing equipment from my hometown, from another brewery that had been in the business for about 9 or 10 years, and they decided they didn't want to do that. And so this brewing equipment became available right around the same time this building became available, this giant factory building. And so that just seemed like too much of coincidence. So that kind of solidified the decision to like go forward with this. And somehow we put it together and made it work and reopened about 2005 in the new location, which is the Rubber Mills, it used to be called up until the 80s or so, right, Randy? Yeah. And then it was changed to La Crosse Footwear. And the story with that is a lot of people think they went out of business. They actually moved all their production overseas. The time was right in the mid-90s to do that. So a lot of companies, a lot of factories moved production overseas just for economic reasons, and so they can compete in the world with the globalization really becoming a prominent force in the market back in the 90s. Left this great big historical building, and that's a big part of La Crosse history too, is the La Crosse Footwear Building, and that business was around for 150 years too. So,
and even since the time that you all have moved into the La Crosse Footwear Building, you've seen some growth when it comes to jobs. You all are bottling your beer and seem to be distributing it more outside of La Crosse.
So at that point in time, around 2004 or 5, when we were just moving into that building, it was basically me and Tammy, and then our friends would help us out. I brewed all the beer, I kegged all the beer, and then we went around delivering it once a week. That was kind of the rotation. That's the point we were at that time. Since then, we have many employees. I think there's 8 full-timers and several part-time people that help out. We've gone from just distributing beer to a handful of La Crosse bars because of our limited capacity to distributing beer almost all over the state of Wisconsin. We're Madison. We're in the whole Fox River Valley area, Appleton, Oshkosh, up there to Green Bay. And then down the lakefront there, Sheboygan area. And just this year, we finally expanded into Milwaukee, which has been really exciting. There's a lot of people living over there and a ton of great bars that are always looking for the new craft beer, the next thing to come along. And so it's great to kind of just be rolling along at a fast pace. And I've got a really great crew that's dedicated, and I trust them all, and they all work really hard, and it's really exciting and really fast-paced. The years are starting to fly by.
One thing that's always been interesting to me when it comes to brewing towns, whether it's La Crosse, St. Louis, Milwaukee, is people seem to take a lot of pride in the beer that's made in that area. There are people who are so proud of City Brewery, the history with Heilemann. There are people that are just so proud of Pearl Street Brewery. Why do you think it is? Why is it beer that people take so much pride in?
For this area of the country, around La Crosse, is that, beer has been a part of La Crosse since its inception. And with our brewery, just about everybody in this area has some tie to the brewery. Either they work there maybe during college, or they're dad, grandfather, uncle, great-grandfather worked at the brewery. We have, third-generation brewery workers there. And that was one thing when the brewery was going to close down in 99. It's, people in the area had, like so many areas, had thought, well, there's just no way the brewery will ever shut down. It's too big. And then when it was apparent that it was going to close, we were just flooded with people that had lived in the area their entire lives and had never actually gone on a brewery tour, and they wanted to get there before it was closed. And so when we restarted, it was like a new awakening for the public. It's like, yes, we can't take anything for granted. We've got to support everybody, and the support was just absolutely fantastic, and we could not have done any of this without the public support we got when we were first opening up, because that got our foot in the door and made it possible to get the idea into other people's heads that, hey, maybe this can work. It was kind of a crazy idea, trying to restart a big operation like that, but with the support, it was great. And the local support for Joe and local brewers everywhere. It's so fun now, because wherever you go, you can drink a local beer.
When you think about the future of beer making and breweries in the La Crosse area, how do you envision it down the line? Do you think there is room to grow in this industry?
Yes, by all means. Even though craft beer makes a lot of headlines worldwide, really craft beer, true craft beer, only makes up a very small percentage of the beer sold in this country. We're talking, I don't quote me on this, but, maybe 10 or less percent of the beer that's sold in the country. So, I think as people turn to craft beer and as it becomes more popular for the average beer drinker, I think there's plenty of room for more creativity, which is the part I really like about it. Being able to brew really unique beers and have people that are actually interested in drinking them too. Whereas in the 80s, it wasn't like that. It was more about brand loyalty and this is the beer I drink and this is the beer I will always drink. And now the name of the game is more variety. You know, just look around at the taverns. Two, three, maybe four taps was standard, even in the 90s. And now it's the average bar has many more taps than that, some of them 20, 30 taps even. So I think that there's room to grow in the beer industry as far as craft goes.
Joe Kachiever is the brewmaster at Pearl Street Brewery in La Crosse. Randy Hughes is the brewmaster at City Brewery. Today, we talked about the significance of breweries in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Coming up next, we'll talk about efforts to grow hops, the ingredients that give beer its flavor in Wisconsin. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, photos, and links to the breweries can be found on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. Newsmakers is also on Facebook, like us at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCullum. In the 1860s, Wisconsin was by far the biggest producer of hops in America. Hops is the ingredient that helps flavor beer, but problems with disease wiped out the hops industry by 1920. Now, some Wisconsin producers are growing hops once again, and our guests are helping provide advice. Carl Dooley is an agricultural UW Extension agent from Buffalo County, and Tim Rabein is the UW Extension agricultural agent in Vernon County. They've held workshops for people interested in growing hops. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis asked Carl Dooley to describe what hops are.
Well, a hop is a perennial that needs to be grown on a trellis, and it the part that we're harvesting is the flower, look like cones, used for flavoring and bitterness in beers and also a few emerging other uses.
Tim, could you describe what hops look like and how they grow? You talked about the fact they grow on trellises, how they're harvested, how they're stored, and how long is the shelf life for hops?
When you first see them growing on the plant, they almost look like immature pine cone in terms of their shape and initial look when they're green. But that's probably where the similarities end. The hop cone is a very, what I'll call, light, fluffy structure. It's the unpollinated flower of the female plant. And one of the things for quality and what the brewmasters always look for would be seeds in the hops. Seed in the hop cone indicates that there's a male around somewhere that fertilized that cone, and that's not good. Technically, what we're harvesting is a cone off of this vine, not a vine, and I'll explain that in a little bit, but they pick the cone. When it reaches a certain age, if you will, which is typically later August, first part of September, very simply that cone has to be dried and then packaged in order to preserve it. The plant itself is pretty funky. It has to go upwards, and when you wrap it on twine in order to get it to grow up, we've learned that if it's perfectly straight up, it doesn't produce as much yield as if it would be at a slight angle. And this plant is extremely sensitive to sunlight. It responds and does many things because of the sunlight. For one of the reasons, when you're training this hop plant, you have to wind it clockwise on that string in order for it to grow. You do it the other way, and you mess that plant up. Why they call it a bine versus a vine? For example, grapes, that's a vine. A hop plant, they call a bine because the true definition of a vine is It has to have a tendril on it that will grab something and support itself. Well, the hop plant does not have tendrils, so technically it can't be called a vine. So they call it a vine. As this plant is starting to grow, what keeps it on the twine is on the main stem, there's a bunch of these microscopic little hooks, and that's what hooks onto the twine and supports it as it's climbing up the trellis. Planting is typically done with rhizomes. We do not plant seed. We get rhizomes from a supplier, and they're planted in the ground in the spring of the year, and they start growing that year. We don't get much of a crop that first year, but by the second year, that plant will be growing up 16 to 18 feet. Got to have our trellis there, and we'll start to get comb production.
Tim, once they are harvested and dried and stored, do they have long shelf life?
A lot depends on the quality as to when they were harvested. Hopefully they get harvested in the right stage. And as soon as they're harvested, within hopefully 24 hours, we need to get them dried down to 8 or 9% moisture, which is very dry. And after that 24 hours, we get them that dry. They are allowed to sit for 24 hours just to kind of adjust a little bit internally with its moisture contents. And from there, they need to go into oxygen-limiting barriered containers. If you're a home brewer and you're growing some, you're going to probably put them in Ziploc freezer bags and try and get all the oxygen out of them. The other key is as soon as they're packaged, they should be refrigerated or throw them in the freezer. With those key steps, you can probably, you know, keep them, you know, for a year or two. What you got to remember is oxygen, exposure to oxygen will degrade the quality of the active ingredient in hops, which happens to be something called lupulin. Lupulin is the active ingredient. If you'd ever see a hop cone and you start pulling off the little leaflets off that cone, at the base stem of that leaflet, you're going to see what almost would look like pollen. And that bright yellow compound is the lupulin that is what the beer makers are after.
Carl, they are an important part of the beer making process, are they not? And just how are they used in beer making?
I'll explain first. I'm not a brewer, but there's several different ways that they're used, depending on the flavor compounds that the brewmaster wants for that particular beer. That will be determined by the variety that's used. It'll be determined by how much they use and at what stages that the hops are added. And there's a whole degree you can get in brewing sciences to help with that. But in many of our lighter beers that are consumed in the United States or in Wisconsin, there's added mainly in the mash and maybe used for a short time in the mash before they're removed again. Some other of our stronger, hoppier beers will be used. They may hop on three different stages throughout the brewing process. And Tim mentioned the lupulin and the amount of lupulin and the type of acids that are in the lupulin determine just how hoppy that beer can be and how much they will add to the brewing process. There are some charts and actually computer software that brewers will use to determine how much to add based on the analysis of the hops. And then there's also that would be the science part, and then there's the art of brewing that brewmasters will use to get the type of flavors that they want. And the hops made up both of the acid, and then there's essential oils that are in the hop cone
which a lot of times will give it different flavors, whether it's a citrus flavor or a pepper-like flavor, and it's a whole array of different types of flavors that brewers can use depending on what the final product is that they want.
Tim, can hops be used for anything else besides beer?
The majority of them do go into the beer. I do know of some folks that will make a hop tea and get the flavor out of the hops just with that hot water. I've talked with a couple folks that have tried that, and they did say you do have to have a fair amount of honey around, because along with some of the flavorings comes that bitterness, and they have to add some honey to it. And then there's hop asparagus. Early in the growing season, when the hop plants are coming out of dormancy, they do somewhat mimic asparagus in that they start sending up the early growth or spikes. And the very first growth that comes out of the ground with hops typically are not used for the production that year. And most of the time, they're cut off. Well, you can take those spikes and actually cook them and eat them as asparagus.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the potential for growing hops in Wisconsin. Hops are a key ingredient in beer making. Our guests are Tim Rabine, an agricultural extension agent from Vernon County, and Carl Dooley, an agricultural extension agent from Buffalo County. Carl, how in demand are hops around the world?
Like all commodities, there's a tremendous variability from year to year in price. And Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but about 4 years ago or so when we started this project, there was a tremendous spike in the cost of purchasing hops due to in part to a major fire they had in a storage facility in Washington State. But in a couple of years, the market had picked up and the price had come down considerably from that point. I think most of our producers are looking at this point and not competing on that type of market, the world type market, but more with a buy local type of attitude with breweries, looking at an all Wisconsin brewed product, or maybe even an all Buffalo County or all Vernon County produced product, and getting those unique flavors from locally grown hops in brewed products from Wisconsin. I think that's more the market that's currently being looked at.
Tim, what parts of the country or of the world are large producers of hops today?
In the United States, it's the Pacific Northwest. There are huge hop ranches out there. We were able to tour one of those ranches as part of some professional development Carl and I did, and it is quite amazing to see the size of scale of hop production in the Pacific Northwest. These hops are grown in regions where they get 7 inches of rain a year. And as we were talking to one of the growers, he said rain out there is just kind of a nuisance because you just plan on doing whatever you're going to do every day. Well, so everything is irrigated. And that entire region up there is just heavy in production, very large scale. And I know prior to Budweiser selling out, there was quite a bit of large growers out there that would deal directly with Budweiser. And now that they're owned by InBev, there's some structural changes taking place. The other major, what I'd call growing region in the world is going to be the Hallertau region, which is just north of Munich. They produce a tremendous volume of hops. Coming back to the U.S., there's actually what I'll call this specialty hop production that is really picking up in many other states. New York, Vermont, Michigan, Minnesota, there's growers in South Dakota. Many of these smaller niche producers are really gaining in popularity.
As part of a grow local component, you think there is a market for it here in Wisconsin?
Based on the functioning of the two cooperatives in Wisconsin that are involved in hops, and there's a private entity that is also directly involved in hops, they're seeing a tremendous growth in hop demand. And we were at a producer meeting this last spring, and that's where a representative from Wisconsin Hop Exchange, a cooperative, basically said, we're sold out. We need more hops. And that doesn't mean you can just go out and grow any kind of quality hops. You got to be, you know, a little more understanding of what varieties to plant, and you got to produce a good crop. But that's a market signal that says we will take on more hops.
Carl, in the 1800s, Wisconsin was a major producer of hops. Talk a little bit about that hop growing history and why the state got away from growing hops.
Basically, it was like several of the other industries in the past. Some disease issues that sprung up long before we had fungicides available and understood a lot about the disease issues, and sprung up and just decimated the crop. And the crop is similar to what grapes did. They moved west to drier climates where they didn't have as many of the issues with disease as they did. And today with fungicides, just as in the Pacific Northwest, we have some tools available to help control some of the disease problems with the hops.
Compare hops to some other crops, Carl. Is growing hops a more lucrative venture?
Well, right now, time will tell. It's a new market, and it's a potential growing market, but I think the jury is still out as far as potential income. I think with like with any specialty type market, the higher quality and the better marketer that you are, the more potential there is for profit. And it's one of the things that when we were first doing introduction to hop meetings is that this isn't like growing other commodities where there's a ready and waiting market for you. You have to develop the market. You have to sell both yourself and the product that you're producing, and you have to produce the quality and the varieties that that brewers want. There's a real connection that needs to take place with the growers and brewers before we'll know for sure just how far this market will go, and to determine what kind of profits that a grower can look at. That connection has to be made, and that trust has to be made between the growers and the brewers, and I think the industry, this new growing industry, is doing a lot to help that relationship form, but there's still some work to do, and especially with individual growers.
I know both of you have been involved in workshops in the last few years on growing hops. Carl, could you talk about the interest from farmers? Just how would you categorize the industry?
I think the first year that we did the seminar, we had like 130 people show up, which kind of surprised us. And a lot of them were looking for a crop that that wasn't, and Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were looking for a crop that that maybe we could stick in, wasn't a lot of work, we could make a lot of money. There was a certain amount of room with the idea of growing hops and local beer, et cetera. Now, the last couple of years, our attendance is still very, very good. I think last year at our March seminar, we still had over 125 people, but they're more dedicated, real interest in actually growing this industry. And we did a survey of growers from a list of contacts that we have and from the other organizations throughout the state. And we had about 60 five people respond to our survey. There was about 60 actually had hops in the ground that were on somewhat of a commercial scale. And they were really looking at, the average was less than an acre. And they were really looking at taking the number of acres from somewhere around 50 right now to, we had them estimate that 2018 where they would be at. And it reported total with these same producers would be at about 300 acres in just a few years. So there is, the industry is interested in growing. There is demand right now. I think the organizations that are out there, the co-ops and the private organizations that are producing hops are doing a good job of marketing. They're establishing those relationships, which it'll take. So, yeah, I think there's some real positive growth that will happen in the industry over the next few years.
Do we have statistics on the number of farmers growing hops now in Wisconsin?
Well, we have just the survey data. We don't have a complete list of everybody who's growing. We had at the time of this survey, which was early in 2013, we had 32 that were growing respondents that were growing hops commercially, and another 16 that were doing it more as a hobby with just a few plants.
How about your counties or the general region, the southwestern Wisconsin region? How many producers, can we count them on one or two hands?
We don't know them all, and I'll respond. Like from Buffalo County North, we have several producers. Probably the largest one is around 3 acres currently, and then there's a few producers that are a quarter acre, maybe a little bit larger, that are in here and let's say River Falls. And I know of a few that are in La Crosse and Monroe County. It's catching on there. A number of people have a few hops in the ground, just seeing if this is a crop they want to expand on. Tim, down your way?
There's a couple what I'll call commercial hop producers in the area, and I know that there's a couple of what I'll call larger producers when you get a little further south to Grant County, and then heading east, there's a few growers. I would have to say that based on some of the attendance and interest, there seems to be a fairly good interest in hop production in Marshfield, Marathon County, and I'm seeing, I don't have any data to back this up or research, but it's kind of in that ginseng belt that there's folks that when I talk to them from that area and we start talking trellis, they'll say, oh, I know how to build trellis. I used to grow ginseng. I think there's a couple folks up there that are retrofitting a ginseng dryer to do hops, and there's that kind of interest there. I know there's a concentration of growers down in northeast of Madison area, and there's a few over in the northeastern Wisconsin. So it's fairly well spread out.
So it sounds like there's potential for a lot of growth, but farmers, for the most part, are not quite sure if this is the way to go.
That's where some of the needs of some research are coming in to try and answer some big questions. One of them is disease, and with the fact that disease was one of the culprits that ran it out back in the 1860s, we have growers that are been growing for 4 or 5 years that are having to learn how to control disease. Amanda Gevins, who is our UW Extension plant pathologist specialist, has really stepped up and is leading a project to get on-farm research going, working with growers to try to determine what is the disease that is the most prevalent, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be downy mildew, but trying to take a look at control methods and working through the whole economics of that challenge.
How many years are we away from this study being completed?
We are just getting started with that study because of what I'll call the cycle with the grant funding that came in with that. So it'll be growing season next year when we're going to first be able to start initiating some of that project.
Tim Rabine is Vernon County's UW Extension Agricultural Agent, and Carl Dooley holds the same position in Buffalo County. They spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about efforts to grow more hops, a key ingredient in making beer. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You'll also find extended interviews and photos. And if you'd like to comment on our program, or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.